Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 825. It's the 12th of July, 2017. On the podcast today, I have Dennis Thomas, CEO, and Ryan McDermott, Project Manager of Phoenix Global Mining, that's PGM. And they talk about the progress they've made so far since listing a few weeks ago, and discuss what's to come in the next few weeks. Plus, I also have CEO Robert Price and Vice President of Finance Charles Cully Cavness from Highlands Natural Resources, H&R ticker, and they talk about the recent funding and what it will allow them to do at their East Denver project. Plus, I've got John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talking about Makanga Resources, that's MKA, and as always, I've got the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs on the platform this morning.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dennis Thomas, CEO, and Ryan McDermott, Project Manager of Phoenix Global Mining. That's PGM. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Hello, Justin.
Hello, Justin.
I spoke to Dennis before. Hi, Ryan. Good to speak to you too. And we'll go through exactly what you're all about and in a bit, because you're newly listed, end of June, I think it was. So, you know, a couple of weeks on the market here. First and foremost, Dennis, an overall sort of summary as to what the business is all about, because like I said, you are new, so not many people would have heard of you. So can you tell us exactly where you are, what you're doing, please?
We have an exciting development of the rehabilitation of the old Empire copper mine in central Idaho. We're currently working through a PFS just listed to develop the oxide ore body, the upper oxide ore body, while concurrently we're looking to examine the underground sulfide potential of the mine. Very, very exciting. And Ryan is the project manager, and we've just we're literally full blast now doing our preliminary feasibility study.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen. You've recently announced also, a corporate update, going into a bit of detail there, and take us through some of the details in that, because several bullet points worth highlighting, I think, and then we can go into what you're actually doing there at the moment.
Yes, indeed, Justin. We are at the moment. We hit the ground running. We were actually when we listed, we just started a 28-hole drilling program, targeting additional oxide resources at the shallow depths to enlarge our JORC resources. And we're expecting the first assay results probably in the next 3 weeks or so. We also starting our metallurgical studies as part of our preliminary feasibility study. And we're targeting, as I said before, 7,000 tons of copper per annum by 2020. We've geologists hired, and concurrently we'll be gaining access to the underground workings, and we have contractors also providing our ground-based aerial surveying services. So we're getting topographical details sorted out for our surveying. And we've also restructured the local operating company, Connex. We now have three directors, which basically gives Phoenix operational and management control. We have 80% of Connex.
Okay, all right. So if I'm listening now, or someone's listening right now, and like me, they're not a geological expert, can you explain the oxide resources and the lower down sulfide mineralization and the significance of this, please?
Well, perhaps, Ryan, perhaps you'd like to carry the baton.
Sure, Justin. The explanation is fairly simple and typical of copper systems like the one we have at the Empire. Mm-hmm. In the near surface, which is roughly 300 feet to the top of the topo, the copper mineralization is in an oxide form. Mm-hmm. Our intent is to mine that in an open pit style, fairly very simple style of mining. and quite frankly, a very simple style of processing. Oxide copper is typically much easier to process and recover using a simple heat leach style recovery system. Mm-hmm. Below the oxide, we have what we refer to as a sulfide copper potential. That's the roots of the system. And in the situation of the Empire, that needs significant further exploration. However, the mining activity that occurred here from the early 1900s until about World War II mined somewhere in the order of 60,000 feet of underground workings. Significant portion of that is in the sulfide, so we know the sulfide exists. Really, our first target, however, is the oxide resource. It's right on the surface, fairly simple to permit in Idaho, and is really the best phase one target.
Yeah. So the plan, like you say, is that's phase one target, and then what's exploring what's down there sulfide wise, is it?
Yeah, and we will do the sulfide exploration concurrently. But it'll be just behind the oxide.
Okay, all right. And for people not aware, I mean, what at the moment, what is the sort of resource on this on the mine so far?
What we have in the oxide published is in a measured and indicated category about 7.2 million metric tons at a grade of 0.055 percent total copper. Mm-hmm. And the current drilling program that Dennis spoke about is really an infill program. It's designed to expand that oxide resource, prove it up, so to speak. That's a 7,000 foot drilling program, and we're doing that right now. We have two drill rigs running 24 hours a day, and we're about we're about 2,250 feet of drilling into that 7,000 program as of this morning.
Wow. Okay. And so, when are you expected to release some significant news? Are we talking weeks or months?
Well, we anticipate getting the initial laboratory results back around the end of the month. We intend to let the lab do what they do for a living and kind of stay out of their hair.
Yeah.
But I would anticipate here in about 3 weeks we'll have some initial data to release.
Marvelous. And I suppose what's ideal is working in the U.S. Jurisdiction that it's I assume it's quite pro mining there, is it?
In the state of Idaho, it is pro mining. In Custer County, which is the local county we're in, it is very pro-mining. In fact, I'd venture to guess that maybe 40% of the population in the town of Mackey are the direct progeny of the miners that worked underground here at the turn of the century.
Wow.
Okay. So people very much understand the economic importance of mining in this part of the state.
Excellent stuff. Okay, good stuff. And so, go back to Dennis. So Dennis, I mean, how did you come across this this project?
Came across it a good few years ago when we were looking for, we were scouring the world really for base metal opportunities, and quite frankly, looking for brownfield opportunities that we could get into relatively early. Early production, and Empire, as I think I said to you before, ticked all the boxes. It has this oxide resource on top that had 287 holes drilled into it, so we knew it was there. It had this exciting underground potential, polymetallic copper, gold, silver, and also tungsten, so high-grade mining during the life of the mine. It really ticked all the boxes in terms of opportunity, and we seized it.
Yeah, and so
and I might add, sorry, Justin, well, and I might add, you touched on it before, a superb jurisdiction with a most supportive population.
Yeah, exactly, and you can never underestimate that, you know, because you see people exploration projects around the world. and with immense grades and all this, but sometimes the government there, you think, well, can't be trusted, or they just it's not a good place to work, and it's full stop. And that puts a sort of really slams down the investment case, doesn't it? Really, but here you reckon so preliminary feasibility study is underway. How long does that take, Dennis?
Well, we're hoping to have that done end of first quarter next year. And we'll be then in a position to then look at doing a bankable feasibility study. We'll be raising finance for the BFS, and we'll be looking to do a bankable feasibility study. Obviously, carry on with ongoing evaluation of the sulfides, and ultimately, after completion of a successful BFS on the oxides in first quarter 2019, then be looking for construction, finance, and first production in 2020.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, listen, there's probably quite a few people on the Vox platform not following you yet because you're a brand new company, a few weeks on AIM. So for someone like that listening right now who likes the sound of this project but are not following you, Dennis, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please.
Well, as I've said before, it's a great project. It's highly prospective. In my experience over the years of looking at projects, this one offers a certainty of resources which a lot of other projects cannot offer. Early production potential. It's extremely low risk in terms of technically, as well as socially, and also jurisdiction. And it also has superb exploration potential, which sits underneath the present surface ore body. I think the second reason, the management team. We are extremely experienced management team, both within Phoenix and also on the ground in Idaho. Blend of technical, commercial, and financial professionals with global international exposure. We've been to a lot of these very, very, slightly dicey locations, and we're familiar and grateful for where we are. And I also think the other thing is an excellent news flow potential. Very soon we'll be starting to get the results of our drilling campaign back. We've got metallurgical developments to do, and it's going to be a very exciting time as well when we go underground and we start sampling the underground sulfides. The sulfide mine originally produced extremely high grade copper, gold, silver, tungsten, and zinc. So it's a really exciting potential in the near future.
Marvellous stuff, guys. Good to speak to you. And like you said, there's lots of news flow coming, so no doubt we'll speak again very soon. Ryan, Dennis, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Justin.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now from Highlands Natural Resources, that's H&R ticker, is CEO Robert Price and Vice President of Finance Charles Cully-Cabanis. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Well, Justin, it's a pleasure to be with you here on Vox. We always like being able to share our story with your listeners.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I've just been on your website. And I advise people to go there. I think you may have had a revamp. I'm not sure when you did that. But if you go to the page about us, you see pictures of you guys in black and white, and you hover your mouse over a picture, and it slowly changes to colour in a nice way, and I think that's very smart. And I feel to go there really brings you to life from colour to black and white. It's very good. But guys, for people not aware of Highland Natural Resources, they may go to your website, but in audio form here, can you give a summary, please, as to what the business is all about?
Well, Justin, I do want to comment on talking about the website, and I think it's so important to be able to talk directly and share our story with your listeners. And as we have done in the past in London, we have done investor seminars and discussions, and we hope to be able to reach out personally and talk to as many of our current shareholders and future shareholders, and of course, your listeners. But just to give you a quick summary, I'm here with our Vice President of Finance, Cully-Cabanis. And we have had a very busy last 6 months as we have advanced all three of our main projects. Now, Justin, we're not an AIM-listed company. We're on the London Stock Exchange. We're on the main board. And so one of the requirements, when we want to raise money, we need to go through a very long process with the UKLA and get a prospectus approved. We went through that process. We got approval last week. We raised raised with primary bid 2 million pounds, an additional 600,000 pounds, and we're real excited about that raise. But Justin, the real story here today, which we're really excited about, we have entered into a joint development agreement with a company named RISA. Mm-hmm. RISA is backed by one of the largest energy funds here in the United States, and that is going to allow us the ability to start developing our East Denver project. I'd like Cully to take you and all of your listeners through the East Denver project, about what the economics are, about what the reserves we expect to get. And Cully, would you please share this with the listeners?
Yeah, my pleasure. This is a project that we're all really passionate about here in Denver. It's a project that's actually located close to town. It's out in the plains east of Denver, and it is an area that is well proven from the perspective of other wells producing nearby. Within the vicinity of the first wells we plan to drill out there, there are numerous, you know, within 5 mile radius, there are probably two dozen wells producing from the exact same formation we're targeting, and they're highly productive. So much so that when RPS gave us our competent persons report on the project, they gave us 1P proved reserves of about 424,000 barrels of oil equivalent per well, and that was 1P proved, the most conservative category of reserves in the CPR. And they gave us proved plus probable reserves, 2P, of about 540,000 barrels of oil equivalent per well. So this is really exciting development potential here. The CPR shows sort of mean payback periods on these wells of 15 to 17 months. So that's less than a year and a half. These things really come on strong. And so if we develop this and get what we expect and what our third-party engineering firms expect, we think we have a really exciting asset. And now that we have the financing in place to begin drilling, it's really a green light for our operations team to implement all the work we've been preparing over the last 6 months, as Robert mentioned.
And Justin, as we've, I believe, shared in one of your previous podcasts, the philosophy of Highlands is to take advantage of the lower oil price environment. And so we allocate on an 80-20 philosophy. 80% of what we do, Justin, is we get involved in low-risk projects that have a good rate of return. 20% of our projects are more higher risk, but great potential. So our three projects are East Denver, which is near-term cash flow. And as we previously announced to the markets, we will be drilling our first well this summer, and we will be providing an operational update in due course. Our second project is DT Ultravert. And DT Ultravert is a series of patents that we have filed on a proprietary process to refrack wells and perform parent well protection. We have issued our very first patent. And Justin, when we were advancing this, and when we originally signed our agreement with Schlumberger, we encouraged oil and gas companies to go out and try this process. Try it. And our vice president of engineering, Domingo Mata, who is formerly with Schlumberger, he has meetings either every week or every other week with independent and major oil and gas companies to encourage them to try our process. Well, Justin, when we didn't have the patent, these companies wouldn't the royalty revenue would not start generating. But now that we have the patents and we've encouraged these companies to try it on their own, and we have tried it on our own in the Peons Basin, and the parent well protection process worked very well, we think there might be a tipping point of the industry trying this technology. I think Cully can give you a little bit of background of DT Ultravert and the parent well protection and the state of the industry in the shale plays and why this is a problem and why we believe companies are beginning to try it now.
Mm-hmm. Just to give a quick introduction to DT, and I know you have some other questions, so we won't spend too much time on it, but it's a really exciting concept because the industry is challenged by what's called well bashing. And that means that when a new well is drilled and fracked nearby an old existing well, the frack fluid from that new well invades the old well. And it not only damages the production from the old well, but it causes inferior performance in the new well. And as the shale industry is going back and infilling all of these existing mature oil and gas fields that have been discovered over the last decade or so, this issue of bashing is coming to light because all of the reserves and all of the engineering that was that was done on the assumption of a repeatable type curve is now being called into question when we're seeing that it's not possible to necessarily come back 2 years later, frack an offset well, and achieve the same results as the first well. So what that does is it hits the borrowing base of major publicly listed oil and gas companies. It affects their market capitalizations and their assets and the publicly disclosed reserves that they put out here in the United States through SEC-required filings. So with that kind of pressure coming in such a high-profile way, we are offering what could be a solution to an industry-wide problem that's, in some senses, is calling into question the value of the entire shale oil and gas industry. And so clearly, any potential solutions to that problem are potentially very valuable.
So, Justin, now that we've filed all the patents, mm-hmm. our costs are minimal in DT Ultravert. DT Ultravert has taken on a life of its own with Domingo Mata's marketing efforts, and companies are beginning to try it. And now that we have an issued patent, we will be enforcing our rights to collect royalties on companies trying our proprietary process. So, Justin, there's East Denver, and that's, as I shared with you and all the listeners, we'll be beginning drilling this summer on East Denver. DT Ultravert is a CapEx royalty-free income stream that we have received our patents on, and it should be generating revenue in the short term. And then going back to the 80-20 philosophy, Justin, mm-hmm. 80% is low risk. And East Denver is very low risk. As Cully shared, it's P1 reserves for the most part. DT Ultravert, now that we've tested the technology and it works, now that we've been issued a patent, it's fairly low risk. We have a third project, and that's our Montana project that we have acquired over 100,000 acres, and we have begun a dewatering process. And on the Helios 2 project, we have discovered methane, and we have discovered helium. We have documented that in some of our previous RNSs, and the competent person's report. But Justin, I want to be very clear about our Montana project. We have not discovered paying quantities. We know the gas is there. We know the helium is there. And we are going to continue the dewatering process. We pumped about 200,000 barrels of water. We filled up a surface pit. Next steps are to drill a disposal well and continue the dewatering process. And we also have previously announced, as we were drilling through what is called the Muddy Formation, we encountered a shallow gas called the Eagle. And we are continuing to do more scientific studies on how to best extract the gas and helium in the Eagle Formation. So, Justin, there will be more to come as we continue to advance the Helios. Great upside. Cully, what's the CPR from RPS on Helios 2?
Yeah, we have a value that RPS gave us of $340 million in a success case. And so what they do is they recognize the fact that we have 100,000 acres there. And as you mentioned, if we're able to achieve commercial production rates of methane and helium there, and it works, then we have a huge area to play with. And this is going to work across a large area. It's a regional resource play, we believe. So the value upside is again, pretty big there.
But again, there's minimal costs to check to see the viability of Helios 2. So those are our other two exciting projects. But the real news today, Justin, is our East Denver project and our drilling campaign. We will be drilling our first well, and this first well can turn into many, many, many more wells as we start developing this. Mm-hmm.
Well, guys, do you know what? You're consummate professionals. I had a few questions there, but you pretty much covered everything. But just to go over it, see, you are starting drilling this summer on East Denver, and you were saying that the risk there is, you know, relatively low because in the region there is several dozen successful wells drilled by Conoco, and also you took me through the fundraise. So that's you covered the points well. So. Thanks very much, that guys, and you also covered the other two bits of the business as well. So I think there's one thing left to do, guys. I mean, if someone's listening right now and they like the spread of projects there and what you're doing off the back of raising funds as well, and they're not following you on Vox Markets, could you give us maybe three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please?
Well, Justin, I would go back to East Denver and the fact that we'll begin drilling this summer. It's very low risk. What we expect based on the other wells in the area is an initial potential of 750 barrels of oil per day, per well. And as Cully previously pointed out, the reserves on a per well basis range from over 400 to 500,000 barrels of oil. Very low risk. And Justin, we've been working on this for 2 years. And finally, all the efforts of the Highlands team have come to this point to monetize East Denver. That's number one. Number two, we'll be able to generate the cash flow internally to be able to take advantage of DT Ultravert and the incredible upside with the royalty revenue, and be able to fully develop or to prove up Helios 2. But again, the story is East Denver. We will be drilling this summer. We hope to establish 750 barrels of oil a day based on the offset wells. And the reserves, as I shared before, are between 400 and 500 plus barrels of oil per well. Justin, thank you for letting us share our story. And Justin, can I encourage all of the listeners, if you could go to the website, we do have a video that shares DT Ultravert. We do have a corporate presentation that shares where the offset wells, where Conoco is drilled in our area. And then I would also encourage any listener to reach out to me directly, reach out to Cully. We like to be able to have the personal contact and are open to answer questions and get to know each and every one of our shareholders.
Excellent stuff, guys. Thank you very much for coming on. And hopefully, as news develops, we'll talk again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Justin.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. John, how are you doing, fella?
Yeah, it's good, and it's a nice market to be broking into.
Yeah, well, do you know what? At the moment, I feel like it's gone a bit like the weather, a bit soggy at the moment. Last couple of days, it's last week we were speaking to each other, and the sun was out, it was really hot. But now I feel the market feels like a bit like a soggy blanket, a picnic blanket laid out at the wrong time, you know. But you think it's a bit buoyant there? You're feeling a bit more buoyancy?
Well, the weather is wet, but it feels like things are drying up, but I don't think that's happening to liquidity. I think the market is still very much there.
I've had a couple of nice stocks go up very well in the last few weeks, but I found this week a bit slow. I don't know why, but there we are. What are you talking about today, John? What are you covering?
I thought we should give Macango a bit of time and attention.
Yeah.
The Platts News Service put out a very positive note on electric vehicles, on demand for rare earths, to do with the permanent magnets that are used in so many of these electric vehicles, particularly the new ones. For some reason, Tesla doesn't use permanent magnets, and I understand that was because they didn't know where they were going to get the raw materials from, the niobium and and other raw. I think it's the lanthium that goes into those permanent magnets. So they're still wasting energy on energizing the magnets in those vehicles. But it's quite probable that they'll follow the rest of the industry and go into using permanent magnets on their motors because they're just a lot more efficient.
So
your car lighter and faster.
Yeah, I'm not aware of this permanent. So what's the alternative to permanent magnets? And how does that work? How does it work?
Well, ordinarily, you have a magnet that you energize. You put you put electricity through it. You energize it, and it becomes magnetic, and then that helps the motor turn.
Mm-hmm.
If that magnet is already energized, and you use niobium and lanthium for that, neodymium for that, then you've got a more powerful motor without having to put any more power in it.
Okay, I understand. And so Tesla didn't have that permanent magnet, but now it's looking like they are going that way. Is that the case?
I suspect they will do. But you know, we don't know everything about what they do, sadly.
Mm-hmm.
But all the other electric vehicle manufacturers, as far as we're aware, are using permanent magnets.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so how will this impact on and how does this relate to Macango, MKA ticker, by the way, for people listening?
Well, in a world where rare earth metals can be difficult to come by, and where the prices have been volatile, Macango has one of the world's better projects for the production of rare earth minerals, particularly for the production of these more valuable minerals, the neodymium and lanthium and others, dysprosium, that are very valuable in these markets.
Yeah. Okay. And where are they in respect of development or exploration? What level are they at? What are they at?
They're at feasibility study level.
Mm-hmm.
They are still working through some of the details of the finer details of the processing of the rare earths for the project. It's based in Malawi, which is a relatively sensible country within Africa. In fact, Malawi doesn't seem to suffer much trouble, and there isn't a lot of mining that goes on in the country. It's not the largest country in southern Africa, and a $200 million project is quite a big thing for them. So we think the quality of the project is good, the value of the project is good. The IRRs look at about 37%. The NPVs, $350 million. So it's always good when the NPV is somewhat larger than the CapEx at 216. This looks like it could be a goer.
Yeah, but as yet though, I mean, this is obviously absolutely transformational for the company, because at the moment they're like, what, 2.4 million market cap.
Yeah, rare earths got so badly beaten when the market collapsed. If you cast your mind back a few years, mm-hmm. the Chinese had built up stockpiles of rare earth metals. They were running a number of investment schemes that turned out to be more like Ponzi schemes, I think, but based on stockpiles of these rare earths. When those financial schemes collapsed in China, the rare earth metals underpinning them were then sold at knockdown prices because everybody knew that these guys were forced sellers, presumably sellers by the states or by the administrators. That damaged the market hugely, and just well every rare earth company in the world got collapsed with the selling. So the market went off those companies, and I think it's time that they came back.
Yeah. Okay. And so, I suppose the next bit of news they're doing. Do you have any idea is likely to be?
I can't tell you what the next piece of news is going to be, but I suspect that will be in relation to feasibility study work, in relation to the value of the project going forwards and the next steps in its development. And I think as they press on with this, they will optimize and refine and improve the processing methods for the refining, well, for the production of these rare earth materials. And let's face it, if this was a lithium company, its market cap would be 10, 20 times more than where we are today.
Yeah.
And rare earth minerals are every bit as important as lithium going forwards. If you're going to build all these electric cars and use all that lithium, you're definitely going to be using more and more rare earth minerals going forwards.
Yeah, okay, so one you reckon to keep an eye on, that's MKA, Makanga Resources, at 2.4 million. It doesn't take a lot to get them going, I suppose, at that market cap level. You know, if they release something, you know, exciting, then it'll move, won't it? The share price will move, you know?
It really shouldn't take much to get this one going, and it is such an undervalued company, and the management are sensible people. They're very measured, they know what they're doing, and they are quite determined to take this through to production.
Marvellous. John, good to chat to you. Speak next week, fella.
Great. Look forward to it.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. And there's a new number one. Never been there before. It's quite a new company as well. I've had them on the podcast. Oh, yes. So at five, it's New Oil and Gas. It's Newog. At four, it's UKOG, UK Oil and Gas. At three, Carillion, a big company that's taken a hit over the last couple of days. I think it's down about 40-odd%. The share price since that profits warning. That's CLLN. And obviously some people following that, taking a punt on that. At two, Extract Resources, XTR ticker. And number one, never been there before, had Brian McMaster, the chairman, on recently. Jan Garden Mines had a good release out yesterday. And definitely worth following, I think. I've got a very compelling project there in South America. And very near production. They are focused on, you know, production and cash flow, so worth looking at. Ticker is JAN. Jan. All right, Jan. Okay. Here are top five most liked RNSs on the platform this morning. At five, Berkeley Energia. That's BKY, a primary crusher delivered to site. Cool. That sounds like a good, nice bit of kit. At four, it's same company. Premier African Minerals, PREM. Restoration, Premier African Minerals Limited. At three, Premier African Minerals, lifting or suspension. At two, it's Talao Energy, or two for Tulu. Director appointment, and quite an impressive sign there. And is it Lenana Munaholo? I think that's the name of the lady. I'll check now. The pronunciation is probably way off, but her name, and she's got excellent CV. Lina Munaholo. And on a Wikipedia page, says a recipient of a number of national and international awards, among which is Botswana's highest public service award for efficient and devoted service. So, very well-connected lady there. Okay, and the number one most liked RNS on Vox Markets platform this morning was from Providence Resources, PVR, Southern Porcupine Basin, drilling operations on the 53rd 6A exploration well program have commenced. So they've got the Ice Max drilling beast there, drilling down into several thousand feet. And hopefully there'll be news on what's happening about that very soon. And we'll hopefully get to Tony O'Reilly, the CEO, on the podcast very soon. That's it for the podcast. Don't forget, if you like the podcast, you listen very regularly, you're a regular listener, which means the same thing as you listen regularly, please do give it a review, because that way I'll gain more listeners and I'll keep doing it, basically. So go to iTunes if you can, just write a line there, and I will cover it. If you've written a line and give me a five-star review, I'll read out your review, and it's much appreciated. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.